and welcome to the 20 Megabyte Doctor Who podcast, episode 497. I'm Adam, and, well, look at that cat. Look what the cat dragged in. The oncoming storm. And here's Kirby Bartlett Sloan.
You're Mr. Thickety-Thickface from Thicktown, Thickania. And so's your dad.
And Kirsty Bissett.
I'm the Doctor, and I just nogged Madame de Pompadour.
Yay! Right, poor old Ben. Ben Shoveler.
Oh, my God, there's someone in the fireplace. Get them out quick before they burn.
Improvisation.
That might not be a direct quote.
And she's back. It's Mary Lang.
No, you're not keeping the horse.
I let you keep Mickey.
But yeah,
that was only because continuity sucks.
Before we started recording, I did Mary, you were talking about moving from Ohio to Illinois, and isn't it a different time zone there?
Yes, it is. It's a central time zone. Oh,
please remember that when being ready for the show.
Yeah, an hour earlier. Yeah.
Right, and. What did you think of the two episodes that you'd missed? Just briefly, of course. I'd be interested to see whether you liked them or not.
Wait. You need a sound effect.
No, I don't. Why?
I have to confess that because of events going on in my life around them, that I did not watch them. So.
That's on Rhys Barton's Book of Excuses, Chapter 3, page whatever. Yes, I know. I've seen that one written down somewhere. Reese used to use that one, actually.
Do they say H down there?
H. There's no such letter as H. That is one of my massive bugbears. It's H, not H.
It depends whether you like steps or not.
I have a bugbear.
Okay, right then. So this week we're going to be.
I've got a video.
This week we're going to be reviewing The Girl in the Fireplace with David Tennant's previous girlfriend, which begins. I'll tell you, it's very
girlfriend, I like that.
Instantly engaged with the beautiful scenery that the BBC have managed to throw together for this episode,
They wander around Wales. Yes,
where? Hey?
No, all these places are in Wales.
No, I'm talking about this the French scenery, the 18th century French scenery. So anyway, costumes.
On that note, let me say, if no one really knows this yet, that whenever they would depart, like the spaceship, and go into the French sets, and or from the French to the space station, that those were actually sets that were built side by side.
Incredible, isn't it?
They weren't using CGI, to make them exit one thing and enter another. They were physically side by side. So
apart from when the Doctor rode the horse through the
That's different.
That's different.
Kirby, if I might interject for a minute, Kirby, does this happen very often?
What?
Why?
That she does this.
What? What, Mary?
I mean, we do the facts and stuff.
She ever got a chance to.
I mean. Really? I mean, actually, and we're at the beginning. That was quite bold.
Yeah,
pedant every now and then. I didn't know this happened.
Now, one other thing about that set, though, is that parts of it are parts of the Satellite 5 set.
Wow. Okay. So anyway, back to the story. Actually, we didn't even start the story. I was just gushing about the lavishness of the scenery and everything, and the costumes and stuff. Anyway, it starts with it's a bit further on in the story, a little sort of jump forward with...
Gee, who wrote this and does stuff like that?
Chris Chibnall.
Moving on.
Moving on. So where do we get it? Oh, yes. So we're just about saying, so it's a bit of a jump forward, and we get, obviously, who we find out to be Madame de Pompadour, calling for the Doctor through the fireplace. Cue title sequence. And then it says at the beginning of the next bit, 3,000 years later.
Master?
Pardon?
Master?
What could possibly warrant an interruption when all of has happened is the title sequence has run and the words 3,000 years later has come up on the screen.
I'm talking about the spaceship.
Oh, go on then.
It happens to be key-shaped for the clockwork connection.
Oh, go on, Ink. That deserves a... Oh, dear, I just buggered up my recording device doing that. Maybe I should have to put the bell a little bit further away.
Oh, you know what? While we're paused, it's also called the Madame de Pompadour, which is also a link to the damn story.
Is it?
Oh,
is it?
Really? Is that the connection?
Anyway, Laurie Nick says, runs in to say hello, you sexy peoples, obviously referring to me, because I'm the only one on screen at the moment. So they arrive, and Mickey's all excited, because it's a real spaceship. Of course, surely he's just been in one to get there, but there you go. And he's quite amazed by how realistic the view is out of the window. While the
Master? Stephen Moffat wrote this not knowing how Mickey was going to get to become part of the crew. So that's why suddenly we've gone from the end of the previous story where Rose was not very happy. She's rolling her eyes at the fact that Mickey was coming along to them being just fine.
Oh, yes. But I suppose she'd have to get used to the idea eventually and, you know, her to be so she could show off about being used to all these things that she's seeing.
She does a lot in this one.
Yes, I think she likes it better than the fact that she's the know-it-all in this. Yeah.
Yes, exactly. She can stop being the dumb blonde for a little while. Anyway, yeah. The Doctor really enjoys poking around at the highly retro scenery and equipment, and then he notices a fireplace. And while the others are just poking around a few corners, he peers through it, starts talking to a little girl who's at the other side. And I just love the fact that it's framed really well, because you've got Mickey just behind the Doctor over his shoulder looking over, and then Rosie's head sort of leans in from the side.
Yes.
Yeah.
I like the scene where Rose looks out the window and there's nothing out there but space.
Yes, well, that's understandable. So anyway, the Doctor has a conversation with this little French girl, and before you know it, he's in her bedroom, which is a bit, you know, it's suspicious.
Why does the TARDIS not translate monsieur?
Why does it have to? Well, everyone's
just
gone quiet.
Just asking.
I don't know. Oh.
It's a science fiction fantasy.
Thank you, Kirsty. Yeah. That's the sort of answer we like to have on this show. Anyway,
what did Mary just say?
I don't know.
I said translate madame either.
True.
No, but that's essentially a sort of a English Frenchy word, isn't it?
That's it for me. I mean, the fact that they've cocked up so badly on that.
I know.
Is it because it's Stephen Moffat?
I think, yeah, Stephen Moffat once again is his lack of integrity when it comes to
Doctor Who fan, obviously.
Ah, but you
clearly
don't.
Clearly not.
And can I just say that RTD would have edited this script, so maybe RTD put it in. But
RTD would have made it better.
Or nearly accidentally played a jingle. But. Jim Drury says, this week Adam takes the long path. Hope Kirby isn't sulking.
I'm not sulking yet.
Yet. Anyway, so the Doctor's poking around a little girl's bedroom, and
that's not the way to say that, Adam.
Well, that's what he's doing. He's in a little girl's bedroom, and he's looking out the curtains. He's poking at candles and having a conversation, but he really shouldn't be there. It's very inappropriate, however he
is. It is very inappropriate.
He is there, and he has a conversation with her, and then he goes and pokes underneath her bed. Not at all scary for a little girl to wonder that there might be a monster underneath her bed. Of course there is. Of course, that's quite clever the way it sort of builds into this. He notices the clock's broken, and he can still hear a tick-tock. I did a tick-tock the other day, actually, and it got taken down. But there you go.
What?
My TikTok, what I did, got taken down for hate speech, apparently. Just me ranting about the Indian, variant, the Indian variant. I'm just having a rant about the Indian variant.
Carried on allowing people to come into the country
after the end of what I was ranting about.
Definitely not spread the virus around.
No, I was just saying a sarcastic round of applause for the people who, one, went to India and came back during this pandemic thingy.
And the government
for allowing them to go there and come back without closing the borders, etc.
There's that, Adam, but there's the fact that people have got to take a bit of personal responsibility.
That's the other thing. I was ranting about the whole shebang. I mean, what a bunch of Egypts. It really is. It's idiotic. Back to Doctor Who. Yes. Sorry. It was topical because it was about TikTok. There's TikToks going on.
I shared one of your TikToks on the 20 megabyte Facebook page, which you can join, and no one commented on it.
Because it was so good, wasn't it? Not only does he summon a monster out from underneath this little girl's bed, he starts touching her face and everything. But he's the doctor, he's allowed to, he's not human or anything. But obviously, it was probably said last time, the design of the whole story is brilliant. The design of these clockwork robot things is brilliant, and it's sinister and slightly creepy. I don't find it scary, but slightly creepy. The only thing Deb thought was scary is when they do these sort of little startling moments where they suddenly jump out and stuff like that. But it's a work of art, it's got to be said, the design on there. Anyway, the Doctor manages to escape.
I'm assuming that when the Doctor Who experience was in existence, they had some clockwork droids on display.
Yes. Yes, they did.
Because they're wonderful looking.
Patrick Bishop says, political TikTok. Well, it was a bit, but I was really grumpy about this whole thing. Anyway, so the Doctor...
I did read that there was a fight over whether they should have faces or not. That Moffat was insisting that they should just have the see-through glass. Davies said no, he didn't want them being, you know, that frightening. He wanted them to have faces. So apparently he won.
Clearly, and I think he was right, because I think
they were going to, instead of having faces, they were just going to be all wig. But they thought that looked silly, so they put the faces.
Anyway, he coaxes the robot through the fireplace, then freezes him with a fire extinguisher. Rose did realise it was a fire extinguisher until... Yeah, you know, the Doctor said so. But have you noticed the way Rose holds this sort of huge thing? It was rather the same way she holds the gun later on in Series 3 when she makes her comeback.
Yeah, very comfortable with it.
Yeah. Anyway, the Doctor does a doctory thing, which is, oh, you're beautiful. Yeah, you're beautiful. Anyway, after gushing about how...
David Bellamy's not in Doctor Who.
Oh, beautiful, right? Beautiful.
There's rummaging around.
Neither's Bungle from Rainbow.
Oh, shut up.
Anyway, after gushing about the engineering of this robot, he quickly goes back to this little girl's room. And of course, she's disappeared, and suddenly she's a full grown woman.
That's just too seriously, Adam.
What? No, don't ever do that again.
What? Okay, I won't. It'll probably hurt my throat to do it anyway. And of course, she's. Did bear in mind,
she hurt your throat if you do that too much,
be
mate.
Be quiet.
The authorities catch up with you.
By the way, it was quite interesting the fact that she's only seen him for about 30 seconds previously. Well, maybe a couple of times, 30 seconds twice. And then she walks into this room many, many years later as if it's not that long ago since she last saw him. And she's very familiar with him. Somebody she thought it's a bit like the 11th
it's
Doctor.
It's a lot like.
It was a bit like the 11th Doctor when
This is a Moffat theme, you know.
Yeah, met Amy Pond, and also
this is where the 11th Doctor came from.
The aspects of Blink, which I like, by the way, the timey-wimey-ness of that. But again, they're going back in time and. Whatever. But anyway, I'm just making a reference to it. She seemed a bit too familiar with somebody who may have eventually thought was a figment of her imagination. But anyway, she very familiar with him, and he feels a bit uncomfortable, I think. And then there's a scene, I do believe, where she just pounces on him and snogs him. I didn't like that. And especially when he obviously sort of got into it a little bit, because when he went back all sort of happy with himself back to to see Rose and Mickey, he said, "I just snogged Madame de Pompadour," which I thought was a bit irritating, but never mind.
In theory,
in theme with the story.
Yes.
Obviously.
And then there's
betting the wink on the horse.
That's not bad, Kirby. Kirby, I'm going to have to give you some sort of thing of an appropriate bit of a jingle here, because this is quite amazing in itself. Hallelujah. 12 minutes and 10 seconds into the story before the first major interruption. This is a leaf being turned over. Yes, Kirby.
Well, you already referenced that David Tennant was dating Sophia Miles for a while.
What? I'm sorry, what did you just say?
Dating.
I don't remember how to pronounce it.
Sophia.
Sophia.
Woo! Sophia. That is, my goodness.
Anyway,
of the highest order.
It's a fact here. You can't just whatever a fact.
Two words.
Whatever, what's that, the fact? My wife and I actually had a conversation about this particular fact before we came on the show. Yeah. And I said, "I'm just going to be quiet until Kirby says it." Right?
Oh, that's mean, Kirby. Yeah.
Well, I didn't know. For all I know, Kirby could have said it the right way.
They probably broke up when he met his daughter.
What?
Seriously, so far this evening, this podcast is just going amok.
I don't understand what he's on about. But when he met his daughter...
To my point, Miles, whatever her first name is, went through a series of boyfriends. And in September 2014, she gave birth to a son with her partner, James Bell. But... her son's godmother is your neighbor, Adam, Celia Emery.
My neighbor. It's more Debbie's neighbor because she used to live down St. Mary's Road, which is where Debbie lived. Oh, I'm not supposed to give out street names, am I? But don't worry, there's several residents of St. Mary's Road. Any stalkers would have a job to find it.
That means people would have to come to the Isle of Wight.
Have you seen Celia Emery recently?
No, I haven't seen her since I asked her for an interview about 3 years ago. She said, "I'm not going back to the Isle of Wight now." And she granted me the interview, but then and she said, "I'll drop a letter from my letterbox," which I did, and never heard another thing. Never mind, if I do ever see her again, Titchmarsh was in the shop the other day, but I didn't get a chance to speak to him. Anyway, can I go back to Doctor Who?
Are you related to him?
What, Titchmarsh? I'm like, how can I be related to Alan Titchmarsh?
Probably
so the through bringing Cruella, up your neighbor didn't give me a ding. Oh well.
Oh, no, you don't deserve a ding. I mean, Andy Nunny says, "Good evening." Oh, did you get that? Is that how he does it? But I can't do the Birmingham accent.
Good
evening, all. Can you do the Birmingham accent, Ben?
I can do the Birmingham accent, mate.
Can you do it like Andy would, really sort of evening really fast?
You're right.
And then he says, "Lucky chap." I think he's referring to. The doctor snogging Madame de Pompadour, and then says they were a couple at the time. Yeah, that was the fact that we should.
They just
don't know, that's what...
they weren't a couple yet, but they became.
Yeah. Oh, according to Andy, they were a couple.
Before when they came on the set, arrived on the set. I'll rephrase that. When they arrived on the set, he had forgotten that they'd worked together before, and he thought she was kind of mean. And then Rose, the scene she did with Rose was the first scene that she did with anybody else, and she's like, "Oh no, she's lovely." So yeah, they'd met before on I can't remember the name of the show anyway.
Okay,
yeah, I heard it in the commentary, and I didn't recognize it. So
you heard that, but you didn't hear the other quote I was going to use.
Anyway, back to Doctor Who. Anyway, Ben, your Birmingham accent.
Sophia Miles.
Ben, your Birmingham accent. You've had a bit of feedback about it already. That's quick, isn't it? Andy Nunny says, "No, rubbish. Ben cannot do the Brummy accent."
Well, I'm okay. Slightly disappointed in the fact that he thinks that.
Why has your voice gone really deep?
Because anyway. I'm rooting around little girls' bedrooms, mate.
Back to Doctor. Anyway, a horse is wandering around the spaceship. A very, very handsome horse, actually.
Hold on, this is just going no. So I'm going to start writing down all the dodgy things you lot saying at the end of the episode. Read them all out, and then you'll all go.
Yeah. I'm just saying, a horse is wandering around the spaceship while Mickey was having a nap. Then he
said it was a handsome horse.
Yes, and very well. How are you supposed to describe a good-looking horse then?
I don't think any horses are good-looking. I think they're horses. Oh, I don't Jesus. Fancy horses, Tatum. I don't
be quiet.
Them.
Anyway,
nice than the other. Oh, that red rum. Oh, what a looker. Much better than that sugar.
Mickey notices that they're being watched by a real eye in a piece of metal. It's very steampunk, that, you know. And then both Rose and Mickey notice that human parts are being used to run parts of the spaceship. And, of course, they also notice the funny smell is emanating. I think by the time the funny cooking smell would have emanated, that all these moving and living human parts would have long since died, but there you go.
Yeah, Fred was confused by that.
Yeah, let me say that the smell of burning human flesh is quite revolting, and yeah. I would never mistake it for roast beef.
No, exactly. Or chicken. Anyway, so it's next like scene is a beautiful scene of people wandering around this magnificent garden area.
With Gwyn.
What?
Yes.
With Gwyn from Merlin.
Yes.
Yes. Yes. So I was just about to say Gwendolyn, I think, was Merlin's girlfriend. Anyway, and the Doctor is superbing from behind a pillar, while the two ladies are wandering through the... This particular scene gave me Tom's Midnight Garden vibes, because she's. When in Tom's Midnight Garden, don't know if you've seen it, heard it, or whatever, Tom every midnight goes to this garden that appears by magic and goes back in time and sees this girl called Harriet, and she gradually gets older every time he goes to see her, and it's a bit that's sort of basically it gave me the sort of that sort of vibe. I do love that Tom's Midnight Garden story. Unfortunately, the film, although very good, is not very cast particularly well. Just saying. Anyway, so he's perving over the Madame de Pompadour, who nearly notices him when she looks over his shoulder. And meanwhile, and then goes back. Hang on, can I just say the next bit? Goes back to the spaceship and gets fed back some information about the human parts being used for the spaceship. Yes, Kirby?
I was surprised that Kirsty didn't bring this particular thing up. I
actually let Adam take a breath after he finished speaking.
They wanted to put a door showing in the gardens going back in the spaceship. I believe it was the director was a little bit disappointed that he didn't have enough time or something to actually show the back and forthness between the spaceship and the gardens.
Okay, well, thank you for that. Andy,
and also scene that got dropped from the final edit where the Doctor has an encounter with the owner, the keeper of the horse, who is actually, like, really mean to the horse, and so that's why the Doctor keeps the horse.
Wouldn't it be interesting, though, Kirsty, if the horse was called Traken, and then the owner would have been the keeper of Traken?
Keeper of Traken. Moving on.
That's the first time in a long time I've actually been able to get.
A ding?
Yeah, it's the first time I've actually.
A ding.
I've been able to get one of those out without being interrupted in mid-flow.
You can ding yourself.
Moment
in
history for this show. Anyway, so yeah, the Doctor has been fed back this information while they watch through some sort of viewing portal stuff going on in the house where Madame du Pompadour is, and then a robot turns up and. So does the Doctor, armed with fire extinguisher, etc., etc. And so he freezes this robot, and then I think Mickey and Rose are there. So they start asking the robot questions. Of course, it won't answer questions until Madame de Pompadour asks them, because they're really after her. But she's not quite. They ready? It was not quite ready yet. What's the words they used? Nobody else.
She's not ready yet.
Was it ready yet?
She's not complete.
Complete. That's the phrase. So anyway, then they do a Vulcan mind meld thingy, the Doctor and Madame de Pompadour, while Rose and Mickey go back to the spaceship and get sort of kidnapped by a load of these clockwork robots because they need some parts for their spaceship. Pardon?
Master?
Yes?
Originally, actually, the mind meld is what was supposed to actually trigger the robots to come for her.
All
That's
right.
when her brain was complete because she her mind merged with the Doctor's, and that's when it was going to be complete. But they felt that that overcomplicated it. But okay. That's what they were waiting for, was that occurrence.
So that's quite interesting in itself, Kirsty, because obviously the runners of the show decided that it was overcomplicated. So they basically edited the overcomplicativeness of a Stephen Moffat script. So
yeah.
That's interesting. Isn't that interesting?
It is interesting.
See,
it's
what
almost
happened
as if he needs
later.
Like, help.
Yeah.
It's complicated.
Yeah, well, you know what I mean. Ben, you might probably not be aware of this, but there was a theory during the Moffat era that some of his scripts were a bit overcomplicated. I don't know if you ever come across that. No?
Really? Because I've always thought they were very self-explanatory and didn't take in a season and a half extra to get to the crux of the matter.
What they actually took, and it's quite a clever thing for the BBC, was to watch the Doctor Who... what they call you the little program they used to have on the Doctor Who special
confidential.
Confidential for Moffat to explain his complicatedness things. There you go. So anyway, they have this. Pardon?
David Tennant said something about Moffat during his commentary, which I just laughed at.
Mm-hmm.
David Tennant said that Moffat is such a good writer, he always figures out a way to close his plot holes.
Oh, my
God. So initially admitted there were plot holes then.
Yeah,
really. Well, back in those days, there had only been, what, two Moffat stories?
Yeah. This is the second one.
I'm thinking about the stuff that Moffat put into canon that we still don't have answers for.
Right, but I mean, Tennant has been in other Moffat-written stories.
Well, Robert Venge Jr. says, hello all, looking forward to listening about this story. So come on, guys, let's do a good job for him. And then he says, happened again in Fear Her, apparently. This, whatever we were talking about. And so anyway, he has the mind meld with Madame de Pompadour just for the sake of so he can hold her face for half an hour. And then they sort of tune into each other's minds, but I thought it was a bit dodgy because she, perhaps if she was that deep into the Doctor's mind, would actually not know him as the Doctor, but as his actual real name. But I
she references it, sort of.
What, the oncoming storm?
No, she makes the reference that, your name is hidden, something like that.
Oh, okay. Still calls him the Doctor. But I didn't mind that scene. Anyway, so Rose and Mickey are just about to be cut up when the Doctor, after having a snog with Pompadour and a party, with Pompadour, comes in all sort of dressed up with a sort of tie around his head and wearing these John Lennon glasses and pretending he's drunk. Now, the Doctor's done this on several occasions and suddenly turning the tables on the baddies by pressing a few buttons and knocking them all out. Rose then comes to visit. So they've worked out by this point.
The way they originally wrote it is that he was drunk.
Oh, okay.
Tennant didn't like it, and I don't think Davies liked it either. You know, that the Doctor would be drunk and lose control like that.
Again, editing Stephen Moffat script to make it better. Just saying.
Yes. Remember, children watch this show.
Mm.
And they didn't want the Doctors be seen drunk.
Don't want to, You don't want to paint a bad thing as a good thing. So anyway, Rose comes to visit to Madame de Pompadour to warn her that because they've worked out that 37 is the magic age where she becomes
complete.
What?
But 42 is the answer.
Is it? Kirsty has posted on the feed for some reason a book I picked up yesterday. What's that all about then, Kirsty?
I'm working on it. Have you post a photo in here?
No.
Are you being distracted by something?
Oh, no. It's just crazy random happenstance that yesterday we went out to a discount store and we looked through the books and my wife picked up. It's a geek cookbook. The geeky chef Strikes Back.
Mm.
And one of the first cocktails in there is a banana daiquiri from Doctor Who. And I was trying to post the picture from it.
Okay. It didn't work so you did well. Get distracted.
I'll post it
then.
Later.
Thank you. Had bananas in France at that time, so I don't know where the doctor got them.
Oh dear!
He brought it with him. That one of my possible quotes was
always bring a banana.
Always bring a banana to a party.
Yes, the doctor has a thing about bananas in the new era of Doctor.
No, Stephen Moffat has a thing about bananas.
Yeah, it's an innuendo thing.
Oh, okay. Anyway. Madame du Pompadour manages to get away, or she follows Mickey and Rose onto the spaceship. And so then she's very clever, works out that this is her future, because she hears herself, doesn't she? Her own voice from one of the other sort of time portal things, saying about the clock on the mantle is broken, etc., etc. sorry, my throat's going all funny.
I liked her expression during this, because it would just seem to be the... Although I don't know what the expression would be if you heard, like, your own voice of words you didn't say from the future. I'm like, nope, that's the expression I'd use. You know, she just looks like, what the hell?
Mm.
And now I'm going to go back home and wait for this, you know?
Yeah. But then the doctor thinks that, or knows that, well, thinks that the clockwork creatures want her head. And he embarks on a mission to save her. By breaking the only link back to the spaceship by riding the horse rather splendidly through this sort of mirror thing.
So it's such fake-looking CGI.
Oh, come on, Kirby. It's old. You worry about fake-looking CGI and when we've reviewed all the 1970s
that.
Stuff. It's actually quite amazing-looking CGI when you look at things like Underworld and stuff like that.
And after the wink, you forget about it. So,
yes.
You know.
Exactly.
I love that wink. It's just...
Yeah.
Whenever somebody mentions the story, I just think of David Tennant.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah, during the confidential cutdown, they showed him do that like three times, and every time I just laughed.
Yeah, that's good. So anyway, the doctor deals with the robots, and he's sort of quite melancholy because he thinks he's stuck there, and he's trying to think of how he's going to live his life for a few hundred years. Stuck on Earth, actually, be a few thousand years, unless he manages to nick his own TARDIS or the Master's TARDIS at a future adventure. Anyway, back to this one.
Is Captain Jack buried?
He's still buried, yeah, but he doesn't know it. He doesn't know that. Anyway, so he says he's going to name a star or something like that for Madame de Pompadour. And hang on, the front door's just gone. Bear with. Just talk amongst yourselves for a bit.
I always wonder, it's like, yeah, we never actually get evidence of that. Oh, they're a star after her. Did you? Yeah. Maura Moffat leaving things on the floor.
Exactly.
Like, just walks away. The doctor doesn't name a star. It's just like empty words. Thanks, Stephen. Typical Stephen Moffat. I mean, what do you do? I mean, the man's just a maniac. He just can't tie up loose ends. I give all credit to Eros Lynn on this one. That Nero's lawn's kind of good looking.
Is he?
Yeah. Saw him on some of the confidentials and stuff. He was a good looking man. Welsh, of course.
Of course.
I love the Welsh accent. I'm sorry, but I really do.
Ooh, I do too. I love the Welsh accent. And I love the Welsh names.
We actually had, that's where we got Callum's middle name is Reese.
There you go.
And a friend of mine complained, said, how do you spell it? I'm like, R-H-Y-S. And he goes, oh, I hate it when people get all, try to modernize names. And I'm like, no, I'm like, that's the classic spelling, not the anglicized or Americanized spelling, R-E-E-C-E or whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
But I think we were pretty sure we weren't going to have a girl because the name that lingered for quite a while was Mefanwe, or the full Bronwyn Mefanwe. Because I like the idea of being able to tell my daughter off in that fashion, Bronwyn Mefanwe!
We nearly called our daughter Chloe Bronwyn.
No.
But we didn't.
Chloe Bronwyn.
Well, actually, we did for the first 4 weeks of our life.
In the fields.
And then after that, we decided to change it. So we did.
I'm back. There you go. I have returned.
We have to put a name down in a birth certificate before we can even leave the hospital. So.
Oh, really? Oh, we get that's interesting. 4 or 6 weeks here.
Well, it's interesting you say that, Mary, about the having to put something in a birth certificate before you leave a hospital, because I've been watching some episodes of Long Lost Family in which babies got swapped about 30 years ago. But I don't want to dwell on that one. Just thought it's quite, because it's Long Lost Family USA. That's why I was bringing that particular point up. And I think, funny enough, the episode was set in Dayton. Not that's not taking the mickey. It was, in fact, set in Dayton. Can I come back? I'll just back to the story, because that was quite an interesting thing. On the 6th of this month, the post office delivered a parcel to here. Our address, wrong name on it. Next door knocked on the door because they had a little red card through the door saying that a parcel would be delivered to us, so that we handed it over to the next door neighbour. And then it turns out the actual parcel was for a bloke who lives at number 25 across the road. So it's all very, very interesting. It's not
like
the post office's fault.
Story, that, mate.
It's not the post office's fault, because it was addressed to this house, but a different name. So the post office or whoever sent it made a right pick.
But it's all right, because there's a big red reset button which we can hit at the end of the episode.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, well, we could not figure out what name to give my daughter when she was born, but they wouldn't let us leave the hospital until we decided on a name, because it had to go on the birth certificate before we could leave.
Wow. That's, maybe that's to stop baby swapping. Perhaps, I don't know.
Maybe.
So where did we get up to? I was just
handsome, yeah. I just looked him up.
Who's handsome? The horse?
Eros Lynn.
Eros Lynn.
Right, where do we get up to with the comments coming through on the feed? We've got... Brandon Moore says, sorry I'm late. I got stuck in the wrong fireplace. I'm not winding you up. Lily Lomas said, yes, Eros is good looking.
Just keep them coming.
It actually looks like euros is good looking. That's a currency they use in Europe, apparently, and in Ireland. Right then, so back to Doctor Who. Yeah, so he thinks he's going to have a happy life with Madame de Pompadour, and until she sort of shows that the fireplace is still working, essentially. And he's very quick to flip it around.
No, it's not working. It's offline.
Oh, he's turned it online with his sonic screwdriver, anyway. And
talks to him about dancing and takes him by the hand and leads him into her bedroom. And so we're expecting something else.
Yeah. And Brandon Moore says the 20 megabyte post office podcast. Well, it was for a few seconds there, wasn't it? Very interesting for the viewers. It means I have to do some editing on the show. So I hope what you were talking about was interesting. Right.
It was.
So he goes through, but he jumps through to the other side and has a short conversation through her, through the sort of aperture of the fire, goes off and jumps around a bit, and then goes back over, and she's dead. I do love some of the scene where he goes, and there's a shot of Rose's face as he sort of runs through the fireplace. I quite like the expression on Rose's face there. She's not sort of jealous. She sort of looks quite happy for the Doctor in some way. But anyway, she's dead. And there's a little letter for the Doctor from the dead Madame de Pompadour, who died at the age of 46 of death. And the Doctor's a bit melancholy after that. What?
It was tuberculosis.
Didn't say that in the story, though, did it? You had to look that up, didn't you?
But she lingered a long time. She was years dying.
Anyway, so the Doctor's a bit melancholy, and he sends the kids off to have a wander around and tour of the TARDIS while he reads his little letter. And then they dematerialise to a painting of, poor painting, actually, of Madame de Pompadour. And then, of course, the spaceship's name is the SS Madame de Pompadour, for the funny little twist at the end.
And that's but you don't know why it is that the robots are saying, you know, we are the same.
Yeah, it's a shame they never really brought those robots back, because they really were quite quite attractive.
They did bring them back, sort of.
Yeah,
but
I'm
not
talking about long term. Right. So this we did refer to the shortcomings of
Stephen Moffat. Stephen Moffat.
Yeah, we refer to the shortcomings of the certain aspects of Stephen Moffat's scripts, which I think we can all agree the idea of these stories up to the point in which he took over were actually good ideas. They just needed a bit of reining back, reining in, which is what RTD must have done. Because this is lavish and it's a lovely little tale. I really quite enjoy this story, but I just wonder what it would have been like, you know, if he'd been the showrunner. It probably wouldn't have been so good. It's not a massive cast in this, but it's a very, very good, very good story. I don't know what more to say about it. It gives me a little warm feeling, not just because it's from a fireplace. You know, it's very nice. And a slight departure from our previous, you know, sort of Stephen Moffat tale that we had with the creepy, extremely creepy empty child Dr. Dances. So I quite like this. I'm sorry, I don't think any of you lot are going to agree with me. So let's find out. So Kirby, what did you think?
The very first time I saw this, I did not like it at all.
Right.
The second time I saw it was the night before we had a podcast about it, 9 years ago, and I discovered that I liked it very much.
Right.
It took a rewatch, and for some reason I had never bothered to do more than see it the very first time. Now, the geek daughter really, really liked this one, and so she knew we were coming up to talking about it 9 years ago.
Yes.
And she pointed me to things to look for, and I did quite a change in my attitude towards it. Okay. I really like this one.
Good.
There's a few things in there which I like, which are references back to Classic Who. We missed it. Since I have trouble watching these, since I've got Blu-rays and can't watch Blu-rays while we're talking on the podcast. Apparently there's one room where the doctor walks in and there's a harp, and it brings back some Five Doctors vibes.
Yeah.
And also the doctor was going to originally... He makes reference to Zeus plugs.
Zeus plugs, yeah.
Mm-hmm. In which this is the only time he ever mentions Zeus plugs in the modern Doctor Who. The Fourth Doctor was going to use them in The Hand of Fear, and he did use them to incapacitate Movellans in an audio. The Fourth Doctor.
Okay. Is that it?
Yeah, I liked it.
You liked it.
I really like this one.
Ben, what did you think?
It's all right.
Yay!
No,
it's your well thought out and succinct reviews. That's why I show up every day.
Well, exactly. Yes, I agree with most things some people have said, and I disagree with other things that some people may have said or may not yet have said but will say in the future. Yeah, as an episode, it was nice and watchable, wasn't it? It was very inoffensive, and I agree that the horse was, by God,
very good looking.
Really, I found a picture of it, and let's just say I've saved it into a special file on my computer.
And funny, you called me Shergar earlier on in the episode, and it does look a little. Oh no, was that desert something like that?
Oh.
And Shergar.
I know. It was very, very nice and easily watchable, isn't it? Very easily watchable and repeatable.
Yes. Is that it? Thanks, Ben.
It's all right.
Yeah. it's really good. I really, really like this. It is an episode that you can kind of put on and just watch without having to know where the characters were before, because apparently it wasn't necessary when Stephen was writing it. Sorry. But it is a story, seriously, you can put on, and it goes at a really good pace because of the being able to travel from the different timelines. It allows them to, you know, move ahead when they want to into the next action beat. And it's great period costumes. There was some really successful stuff done. Like, building the sets side by side was just a stroke of genius. The look of the sets, the spaceship And of course, there were some physical locations that they used, but they all tied in so well to the French locations that you could have sworn they went to France and did it all.
Yeah.
No, not seriously, because we know that BBC hasn't got the budget for that.
Not at this stage, no.
But they did have the budget for a 2-night stay in London for something. Or an overnight stay, and they thought that was special.
To go to a desert somewhere to film as well, later on.
But it's a really, really good story, and I enjoy it every time. There's some great lines. I really love the whole kiss thing, and it's not between the doctor and the companion. It's okay. I mean, we all fall in love with the doctor, and for somebody to express that on the screen, I think that's just like, well, yeah, he was my childhood hero, and depending on if it was David Tennant, I'd definitely snog.
Yeah, I think you're right in some ways. I think
if he showed up looking as crisp and clean as he did when he was my childhood hero.
I think if you have that sort of connection with the Doctor, yes, I suppose you would be a bit jealous of any character that would actually have a closer connection with him if you're that way inclined.
And I did really kind of, this time when I was watching it through, even though I was listening to the commentary, they were talking about certain things that they liked, and they were talking about Billy Piper's performance, especially at the end when he's just come back in and he's got the letter and he hasn't read it and they leave him alone. But there's just really some wonderful acting just going on in her face through that whole scene. If you want to go back and look at it, it is really, really nice.
Yes.
And the other neat thing, too, is at the end when he's reading the letter, they actually had her audio at that point and played that back so he could hear her reading it as he's reading it, because it was all written in French. And I think he knew like two or three words that were in there. So, but yeah, it is fantastic. And if you want to hear me rabbit on any more about this, you can head over to the Colton Collective.
Nice
and
segue.
We have a, I know, beautiful, wasn't it?
Yeah.
It was like sliding from France into, I don't know, a spaceship.
What, for a fireplace?
Steeples. But yeah, we've done like commentaries on all the new series stuff, and I won't bring it up ever again, but
where
if you're
that?
Ever listening for a commentary, go to the Coltham Collective podcast.
I think I will do that.
Was that who1.co.uk?
Yeah, something like that. We'll work it out in post.
Nice one.
Now, since you didn't mention it,
uh-oh,
but you mentioned the great costuming, her dress in the ballroom scene was originally worn by Helen Mirren in The Madness of King George.
Yes, but you didn't mention it, that the one in the mind meld scene was her favorite.
No, I didn't.
No, you didn't. Funny that.
Wasn't what that funny, to be fair. Robert Vince Jr. says the Mickey stroke Rose relationship was off. Lillian Robbins says this is one of the better Moffat stories. Yes, Lillian, it's because RTD edited it a little bit. Brandon Moore said, yeah, Kirsty, I agree. I think the episodes you can put on are much better than ones you can't.
I guess that worked in your head. Reading it out later,
the way I read it. I don't know. Anyway.
Yeah, it's your fault. We'll blame you.
We've had to wait 3, maybe even 4 weeks for this, but Mary...
Well, I have to agree that it was beautifully done. All the production values are top drawer. The music throughout,
Bob's coming.
Every time that, there's this sad scene, the music matched it perfectly.
Yeah.
And yes, it did win a lot of awards. Then they get the Hugo and a couple of other awards.
Probably.
But I have to say.
Way the butt.
No, she said, I have to say.
She said, but I had to say.
I just want to say, that whatever everybody loves about it, I can't disagree. But for me, when I first saw this, I was very confused. You say that Moffat's script was complicated. Well, yeah, it was. I didn't catch a lot when I saw it because I was so taken with, the beauty of it and the sound of it and all of that. But I was left at the end of it thinking, what? Where did those clockwork droids come from? And, you know, what were they doing? And what is this about, you know, human parts in the ship? You know, none of it made any sense to me. And I also wondered, why can the Doctor, why does he keep progressing forward through her life? If all these different windows into her life exist, why didn't he accidentally go into one when she's younger, you know, as opposed to the constant forward progression?
Yes.
As that seemed kind of inevitable. But yes, the thing that I take the biggest, problem, the biggest problem I have is now, and this I have to attribute a lot to Moffat, but somewhat to Davies, that the Doctor is turning so human. My love of Doctor Who is based on the fact that through all of classic Who, and even through the Eccleston era, he was alien. He was more alien than human. And I like that because that kept him apart from the problems and the people and all that he dealt with. And isn't it true that even in the last episode, the school reunion, doesn't he say that he has to guard himself against, you know, having relationships because it's so painful for him to outlive the people that he makes relationships with? But here he is falling in love, with Madame de Pompadour. And it is obvious that he is. And Rose, of course, is jealous. You know, well, that's going to develop onward into their own relationship, and it's going to bleed into the Martha era when, you know, he's so in love with Rose, you know, that he can't pay any attention to yeah, Martha. You know, so I mean, it just really disturbs me to see him become so human by falling in love and being, you know, taken all through this episode. They keep talking about, he and Madame de Pompadour keep talking about dancing. You know, have you danced? And he's like, well, you know, not really. And well, I can teach you to dance. And then there's that other there's a later conversation when the last time he sees her before she dies, when she's actually taking him to see the fireplace, but the whole scene is set up so that she's like, okay, I'm going to teach you to dance, and takes him by the hand and takes him into her bedroom. And then I'm thinking, oh my gosh, this is supposed to be a children's show, you know, and then the reveal that, oh, it's the fireplace, you know, that yeah, she's taking him to see. But there's all this innuendo running under everything that I don't know, maybe it's a way to hang on to the older fans while, you know, the younger ones, it's going over their head. I don't know. But, and I just wonder if it has to do with it being the new era where people are looking for that, the Doctor being in love and all that, because it was never a factor before. But with the Moffat / Davies eras, it seemed like, you know, maybe that's what brings the fans in because they're looking for that. I don't know, but I don't like it. What is it? I think that was all that, and I had problems with the Vulcan mind meld. It just seems so, I don't know, out of place.
The Doctor's done it a lot since then. Well, not a lot. He has done it since then, yeah, sort of touching thing.
Yeah. So anyway, so I have a lot of problems with that aspect of the story. And as we continue on through the new era, you know, you're going to hear me, you know, harp on this theme with some frequency.
Okay.
So there, that's my thoughts. I mean, so that for me, it sours things just a little bit for me, okay, on this one.
Well, you mentioned about the human thing. Half of this sort of change in the Doctor is attributed to when the Doctor removed the time vortex from Rose. There was a bit of contamination going on. He sort of essentially contaminated by Rose, essentially the accent and that sort of thing. And the same went for the Dalek. It's a bit of the balance that the Dalek or the Daleks were contaminated by the contact with Rose and vice versa, but in different sort of ways. So basically Rose is a catalyst for the whole of these two series and this big build up to what happens at the end of this one. I think that's basically what they were essentially trying to get at. Maybe they didn't sort of explain it that well. I don't know.
I want my Doctor to be an alien, yes, and I want him to be above all of that.
Okay. Fair enough. Lillian Robbins said there was a deleted scene explaining that the droids were clockwork, so they worked if the ship's power fell, which makes sense. Robin Vince Jr. said, even though there is a Torchwood connection with Jack being there from the 51st century.
They never mention Torchwood in this story at all.
No, well, it's good in some ways. Wouldn't have made any sense to the story for it to be mentioned. Lillian Robbins says, the scene with Rose strapped to a table with a prominent view of her chest was meant to keep the dads watching.
It did.
I missed that scene. Oh, well, never mind. So that brings
really?
Us... Pardon?
Sorry, I don't find her that attractive.
Okay. That brings us to Kirby's part of the show, where we are going to have him read Robert Haynes' feedback.
Should we start with that?
Yeah, otherwise it'll get forgotten, won't it?
Well, I have two more things on my list to remind you. Any stray feedback and news?
The stray feedback is for you to remember,
Robert,
Kirby.
Robert put in
the
some
news,
feedback.
Yes. But if you can remind me about that in the part of the show where we normally do news, that would be more helpful. But could you do Robert's feedback prior to doing your
yes, usually your I do for... the 20 megabyte first, but okay.
No, well, on this occasion, you're going to do Robert's first.
The girl
very
or the
naughty
fireplace.
Boy. Yeah, go on.
Well, three holes in the ground. And you know why I have to say that? That's a deep subject. not as good as Moffat's last story. And here we continue the Doctor and romance, which I don't like at all. Especially the Doctor's, I just snogged Madame Pompadour. It all undermines the alienness of the character, making him just like any other human, which I don't feel is right. And the bloody Vulcan mind meld. No. It's not Star Trek and shouldn't be. And the Doctor on the horse out of the mirror, they haven't quite managed to make it look entirely convincing that it's the Doctor sticking Tennant's head onto the stunt double. Seems he wasn't allowed on the horse at all, which is a shame. Yes, he was. It's in the confidential.
Mm-hmm. Well, he wasn't allowed a horse in the
yeah, bloody health and safety.
He has allergies to the horse, so he didn't want to be riding on it.
Ah.
But there is a scene in the confidential where he's on it.
Yeah.
Anyway, I want to like the Clockwork Robots, but I don't really now. They're quite unconvincing without their wigs. What? Tennant seems to be playing a lot of this for laughs. I'd much rather he dial down the camp. Not a big fan. Next, please.
Well, thank you, Robert. So now you can do your normal bit.
My normal bit. Well, now I'm going to refresh it.
Are you? Thank you.
Because by now, I'm sure someone has changed something. Let's see.
I'm not sure anyone has changed anything. Are you talking about me?
I posted the picture of the painting, which was behind the TARDIS.
Right.
And so Thomas Cookson said she looks like 7 of 9 in that portrait. Dave Cooper.
Hey.
Yay! Says great story and episode. And they post a picture of the actresses herself.
Yeah.
Neil James, The Girl in the Fireplace. I really enjoy this one. The juxtaposition between the 51st century spaceship and 18th century France is terrific. It's fun having Rose overseeing Mickey's first TARDIS trip. David Tennant is clearly having fun, and the romantic stuff is handled pretty well. Sophia Miles, did I say it right?
No.
Just move on.
How do I say it in case
Sophia.
I run across it again?
Sophia.
Sophia. Sophia Miles gives a lovely performance. It's spelled Sophia. Yeah.
How would you spell it if it's Sophia? S-O-F-E-I-E-A? I mean,
And everything is really nicely designed. The Clockwork people are really creepy, and that first jump scare still gets me every time. I'm not a huge fan of the drunk doctor, and the horse effect is very dodgy, but this is a good story with a great guest star. 4 stars out of 5.
I have to say, Kirby, you struggling to say Sophia. It's quite funny because you're always having a dig at Deb when she can't say Omega properly.
Now she's got some leverage.
It's a shame she's not here tonight. She'd really appreciate that.
Or at me when I say Clara. You're like,
Clara! Yes, carry on.
Robert Wiss Jr. Posts a picture of Snoopy clutching a heart.
Aww.
And then says, this carries down the road to Deep Breath and the sister ship with the 12th Doctor. The Doctor knew something happened in the past, but he could not remember because of his regeneration.
Oh.
I posted a link to a YouTube copy of the TARDISode, which has the events leading 50 seconds of the explosion, which damaged the ship.
Thank you for that, Kirby.
Robert Wince Jr. says, my review of The Girl in the Fireplace. To get another great story after school reunion was very enjoyable.
Oh, he's paused. Would you like me to say it for you?
Yes.
Sophia.
Sophia Miles was great. And the time connection to the 51st century, Jack's time, and the connection to her life at different points in her life in 18th century France, added interest in the story. The clockwork people were okay, and the Doctor jumping through the mirror to cut the timeline off was fun. In the end, it was sad that they missed each other, and it breaks the Doctor's hearts. The Mickey Rose romance is a little off. It seemed the writer didn't know the relationship between the two was not right.
I think there's still a platonic love anyway, but as friends, so I didn't have a problem with that.
Yeah. In School Reunion, Mickey and Rose weren't on great terms. In the next two stories, it goes back to the way it was. My rating, 4 out of 5.
I haven't got a problem with it.
Skipping the script.
Yeah.
Apparently, there's reference to Ian Kirk getting his COVID shot. So Robert Wince Jr. says, Congratulations, I got mine last week. In Ohio, no masks except for public transportation and places that ask you to put on a mask until 2 weeks after fully vaccinated. Brandon Moore.
I'd just like to interject here that I really miss Brandon's audios, but I appreciate him writing them, but I prefer the audio. Don't you prefer the audios?
Yes.
No, I just...
You know who I miss?
What?
Jim the Fish.
Oh, you blew me neck. That goes back a bit. Nobody ever knew who Jim the Fish was, but yes, they were good. Anyway, carry on, Brandon.
Do you know who Jim the Fish was?
No, I don't. Do you know?
No. Do you still have an email address? You might want to...
No, I don't have an email address. Aww. Carry on.
Brandon Moore. Nay, The Girl in the Fireplace by Stephen Moffat. This was the first story that scared me. I was 9 years old, and I was scared that there would be a monster under my bed. I've always had a problem with the ticking of clocks. This was scary. Wow. There is still much to appreciate about this episode as an adult. However, in fact, there are two things about Renette I appreciate in particular.
Oh, dear. Sorry, I just lost my bell.
Sophia. That is how it should be pronounced, I think.
Sophia. Miles. Not difficult.
Miles is... absolutely stunning, and so is her acting. I can buy the romance between Tin and her far better than between Tin and Rose. It's a shame that she didn't have any adventures with the Doctor before she popped her little French clogs, though I doubt Big Finish will squeeze in 4 box sets in the fullness of time. Speaking of the fullness of time, the juxtapositioning between 51st and 18th century time zones is a fascinating idea. The body horror of the spaceship is perhaps not extrapolated to its fullest potential, but serviceable nonetheless. The mind-melding scene is fantastic and develops on themes Moffat had raised in The Empty Child about the Doctor being a lonely youth. Also, Sophia's... am I right?
Yes.
Breasts look like they're about to escape, so it's no wonder the Doctor lets his guard down. The Doctor bursting through... oh, we were talking about bursting. Yeah, right. Yeah. The Doctor bursting through the mirror is a cool moment, though the effect doesn't look great today, and the Doctor's line about, we can't use the TARDIS, we're part of events now, only serves to highlight the potential plot hole rather than patch it up with a bit of timey-wimey glue.
Indeed.
I like the bittersweet ending and overall enjoyed the story. Next week, it's Revenge of the Cybusman from beyond the grave! And then Kirsty posts a picture of the book that she mentioned.
Yes.
And is that it?
I think that's it, yes.
It's a sideways picture. How nice.
I'll stop picking on her.
It was so you go and buy the book. I made it difficult for you to read one of the recipes, but they actually have a website too, so you just go to geekychef.com and they've got some online recipes, and it's from all sorts of different things like Lord of the Rings, It's just stuff that's, you know, like you can get a rack, you can make a Ractogeno. It's not from Star Trek, but it's inspired by the drink. So it's a lot of fun recipes that you can, you know. And I'm not affiliated with them whatsoever unless they want to send me the rest of the books.
That reminds me of this book that I just pulled off my shelf.
You didn't need to slap it. We believed you had a book.
Dating back to, it says, copyright 1984, the Doctor Who pattern book.
I could tell by the way you slapped it. It was 1984.
Do-it-yourself Doctor Who, a galactic collection to knit and sew, which is really interesting. It's all fit Doctor store. What?
Scientists will be with you as soon as possible.
Oh, sorry, back now. Where do we get up to? What?
Kirsty.
Oh, God.
What? It says the book is called The Geeky Chef Strikes Back. Does that mean that it's a sequel?
Yes. I saw that earlier. And you were not listening.
I was probably looking up some minor detail that I needed to.
No, I found it at a discount store for about $300, but I would recommend getting
it. The master is not happy with us.
I didn't like getting the music, so.
Alan's the Love Butcher, Vision on. Alan T. Butcher also says, that's it.
What's it?
I'm assuming the book.
Oh, marvelous.
Was it a that's it? Or a that's it?
Right, where do we go to? Brandon Moore said, I can do audio again next week. I work some weekends, so can't always find the time. Any time for doing feedback for this show is highly welcome, but obviously we prefer audio, but if you can do writing stuff as well. Either way, it's brilliant. Just saying, so don't go away or anything. I wish I'd not mentioned it now. Mary, help, you've got some feedback to read out.
Yes, I do. From Terry Miles. Okay, it says, once again, having to send in feedback early due to being on the road Sunday evening. Listened to the podcast Monday on Facebook. Please stop muting yourself, Kirby. It's confusing. Love the way Mickey.
You don't know how to act when you're like that.
Love the way Mickey is happy to be on his first spaceship. It's in a right mess, though. The doctor has on his brainy specs. Love the look he gives Renette when he says, how you've grown up. He's at it again. Kissing, he's the worst than Captain Work. Captain Kirk, I'm sorry.
Captain Work.
Captain
Shatner Work for you, Mary.
Just love the look on Rose's face when she sees the doctor's reaction to Renette. How come they only found the windows, in quotes, to Renette's life in order and not all over her timeline? Yeah, that's my question too, Terry.
Indeed.
The doctor can mind meld and finds that Renette has a very strong mind. Like the comment, you're not keeping the horse, you keep Mickey. You never know when you're going to need your doctor. I'm not winding you up. Dying at 43 in the 1700s was a good age. Mm. If they hadn't parked so close to the wall, they might have looked behind the TARDIS and found out what the spaceship was called. That's true. Yes. Yeah. Next up, Jackie's back with Pete and Mickey meets Ricky. Stay safe and well, Linda and Terry Miles.
Thank you, Mary. That was very articulate of you. Which leads me on to hoping that this is loud enough, but I have prepared myself in the case of
well,
it's not.
Well, good morning, 20 megabytes, Andy Dunn here. Hopefully it sounds okay. I've got the volume pumped all the way on the microphone, so hopefully it should be all right. Audacity seems to have upgraded itself some, I didn't know that. Anyway, yesterday I watched Gert and the Flypace, which thoroughly enjoyed. It's quite a slow-paced story. I mean, it's really, there's not a lot of action in it. But it's more about the doctor and his relationship to other people. And this one's interesting because he goes back and goes and sees Renette as a very young child, then as a young woman, then slightly older. And it's interesting the fact, you know, for him, he's away for a few seconds. For her, it's a matter of months, weeks, years, even. Bit like when the Ninth Doctor brought Rose back after what you thought was 12 hours and turned out to be 12 months. But it's interesting showing how, again, it's other people are ephemeral compared to him. You know, he did want to go back and see her, and she obviously, the real Loud and Ballon Popular Pompadour died when she was only 43, so we missed her. And it's interesting watching the king aging. He was only 6 years, but by God, he did look rough, didn't he? But I suppose, King of France was probably not a sinecure. Anyway, I'm sure itself is... It didn't quite flow, you know. We're trying to work out the spaceship. They're repairing it, and you don't realise until the end why they wanted Renette, because of course that was what the ship was, and they're all confused clockwork robots. Clearly thought that they needed that person to pilot to become the ship. That's the reason why I thought it was all about. You only get that at the end, but it's I mean, clockwork robots. I mean, it's just a bit steampunky, isn't it? And I thought that was good. That was very cleverly done. I also suppose it would fit in with at the time that the clockwork would have been a modern technology. The 1820s, 1830s, round about them. So and the busted clock as well. I mean, this is going back to time as well. You know, the clock is broken. But it's I thought it was very well done with the spaceship having the portals onto Paris, and the spinning fireplaces. I thought that they really did quite well. Doctor again, the way he's thinking things through, and at the end you can see he's actually devastated by Renette losing. And this Mickey actually, he spotted that. He said, "Come on, you can show me around. You know, show me how big this TARDIS is." He takes goes away because he spots. You know, Mickey being sensitive for once, actually spotting the Doctor does need some time on his own. Rose, yeah, again, she actually did some quite good things, you know, working out his eye and heart and things like that. I think she sort of worked out what was happening on the spaceship as well. Renette herself, I think she, not phased at all by the Doctor, and looking, okay, he got a good snog of her. Of course, they were a couple for a couple of years, I believe, you know, and then he left her. Didn't do too bad either, did he? And of course, we had some nice typical French décolletage, which again was we've certainly seen quite a bit of flesh in this story, haven't we? You know, sort of yeah. Don't remember the classic Who having so much bits on display. And of course, you know, we do see a lot of Jean Barrowman. I think we get to see Matt Smith just about naked, don't we? But enough of my perverse lustings. Not about Matt Smith, of course. The story itself, yeah, it did go on well. I think it was well explained what was happening. Could have passed in a little bit faster. The horse on the spaceship I thought was really funny, and yeah, he was the rider, you know, what's the phrase? The knight on a white horse. There's a phrase there, I can't quite get, you know what I mean? Obviously, that was him. That was actually a doctor riding it, because obviously, when he was on the horse, he only shot for the back, so presumably that was a stand in. But yeah, thoroughly enjoyed this story. Looking forward to the next two. My God, yes, I mean, you know, but it's funny to think these are, 15 years old now since we first saw these. We just don't know how they've aged. Anyway, until then, be seeing you.
Thank you, Andy. Right, it's interesting, he was talking about that, and it has been mentioned on this episode about Madame du Pompadour's cleavage. And there must be something wrong with me, because I didn't notice it. And I'm usually the first to notice stuff like that. I think I might have to go and get some ointment.
I think it's Vaseline you need, maybe not ointment.
Did you say something, Kirby?
How could you not notice?
I don't know. Maybe I'm not quite up to the scratch of Nicola's appendages. Right then. I suppose we better play this. Oh, that's the wrong bit of music. Let's try this bit.
Hello, 20 Megabyte
Oh dear.
Hello, 20 Megabyte Podcast. This is Ian Kirk.
Thank you, Ian.
The Girl in the Fireplace by Stephen Moffat. They use the Satellite 5 set again. The original script had an out-of-order meeting between the Doctor and Madame Pompadour, because it's Stephen Moffat. This is the only story this year to have no Torchwood reference. Stephen Moffat and Russell T. Davies could not shoehorn one in. Qu'est-ce que c'est, Torchwood? Don't you worry your pretty head about that, madame. I've not re-watched the story. It was good, though. It was sad, her dying at the end. The horse and mirror effects were a bit sad, too. I just got my second vaccine today.
Congratulations.
Bye for now.
Yes, thank you, Ian. Which leads us to the final part of the podcast's traditional feedback section, to be audated, no, that's not the right word, dictated by Ben Shoveler.
Right, I've only read this through once, and it didn't go well then.
It's more than Merry when he gets.
We'll give it a go, but thanks to the councillor for his good words.
Wow, you got to read it through before you read it? That's more time than I think I've ever forgotten.
It's a professional thing.
No, I'm saying I normally get it like a few seconds before Master says, okay, could you read this?
No, I insist. It's in my contract.
Before you start, Ben, Brandon Moore says, Andy, stop turning your knob. Is this the innuendo podcast all of a sudden? That's never happened before. Yes, carry on.
I'm not sure if it means he's turning his knob or he's turning his knob. I'm not sure.
Is it gone French all of a sudden? I know that's
anyway, let's get on with this one. Mask of the Man Dragging Her, Clockwork Edition. Or Spare Parts, Clockwork Edition. Dear 20 Megabyters, the girl in the fireplace is, of course, a closely studied metaphor of traditional local government bureaucracy executed in error and taken too far to an unintended end. The clockwork droids are taking action to resolve the problem that their ship has sustained very significant damage. Their goal is reasonable and positive, to repair and adapt in order to overcome that damage. However, the lack of reasoned political control of their operations is enough, without intent of maleficence, to lead to two major pitfalls: the mass murder of the entire crew, and the grossly overblown plan to secure the brain of an 18th century courtesan through an administrative error, equating her with the ship. Given proper governance, these unintended consequences could easily have been anticipated and foregone to the considerable benefit of all residents. It should be noted that whilst some might say this plot is a rather elaborately silly in that such an advanced technology causes such a bizarre and unlikely scheme and consequence, in fact, we've seen what Twitter caused, so accept it. We also learn that highly advanced 51st century clockwork robots are very little. Are very literal. I fell over the word literal. You'll have to do this one in the edit. We also learn that highly advanced 51st century clockwork robots are very literal and a bit thick. It was worth waiting for.
It was.
Oh no, seriously, hold on, let me just get ahead of myself.
You'd be very careful how you say this one, Ben.
Yeah, I know, man, seriously.
Possibility of offence.
Hold on, just give me funny thing is, Adam, at the moment, obviously, nobody knows what we're talking about.
No, but I'm going to Google it for you ahead of...
I'm doing it at the moment, man.
Oh, you are? Okay.
ERSQ.
No, it doesn't come up with anything. Oh, there's Time Traveller's Wife?
Absolutely. Anyway, all in all, The Girl in the Fireplace is an excellent esque story.
What is the word?
It's spelled NIFFENEGGERESQUE. So it's
Niffenegger-esque.
Explain it.
Niffenegger-esque.
Live feed.
Hey?
I've just tried to Google it, but I've probably spelled it.
Well, it's a woman called Audrey Niffenegger. It's an American white owner.
Maybe that's where. If there's a lady called that, then it's Nifferic. So
she wrote the Time Traveller's Wife novel. So that's what he's referencing.
Oh right, okay. So
I see what he's getting at. Then
it's nothing that only councillors understand. It is like day language for the normal people. Okay, I wasn't sure. Okay, so what's her name?
Niffenegger-esque. Her name is Niffenegger, but the word is Niffenegger-esque.
And take two. All in all, The Girl in the Fireplace is an excellent Niffenegger-esque story. With a complex, say professional. Say ex-professional. The story with a complex time structure seldom seen even in Doctor Who. It is striking that despite the pronounced romanticization of the Doctor and Rose's relationship, we not only find Mickey joining the travelers, but we here are presented with a romantic cul-de-sac for the Doctor. The narrative and dialogue are stylish, imaginative, and fun, taking such full advantage of the fact that the tale allows for an 18th century horse to randomly find itself on a spaceship. Proves we are in the hands of a master of storytelling.
What?
That's funny because I thought it
he was being sarcastic, isn't he?
I think it was written by Stephen Moffat, which that would be. Oh, hold on. David Tennant is, as always, at the centre of a beautiful performance and ubiquitous emotion, usually limited to brief standout moments through most of the history of the show. The rest of the cast are excellent and yet again excel in direct proportion to the amount of interaction they have with the Doctor. This is hugely entertaining and top-notch quality, taking the show places seldom, if ever, seen, but still feeling entirely like Doctor Who in every atom of both of its hearts. Aww. Its blue box and its sonic device. This story is perhaps one episode too short, as who would not want to see Rinette get at least one trip in the TARDIS before her untimely demise? Next up, Doctor Who and the disregarded spare parts, alternate edition, or the trigger of the Cybermen. Those are my thoughts. Counselor and world leader Alan T. Butcher.
Do you know, he's got a point there in regards to maybe one trip in the TARDIS for Rinette, because I think it probably would have been a better twist if River Song had actually been the Doctor and Rinette's child rather than the rather less explicable Amy and Rory. Because how the hell did she become a time person anyway? Just saying. But yes, thank you, Alan.
That whole River Song thing, if we were getting into it, made absolute complete sense. Yeah, total sense. Well done, Stephen Moffat. Well written. That wasn't confusing at all. No, absolutely not. No,
I liked River Song, but I didn't. They explained her existence as a time person away with the Artron energy that she may have absorbed while being conceived in the TARDIS. Possibly. I don't know.
I think it's somebody who had thought I know and then couldn't work his way out of a hole.
Lillian Robbins says my phone battery died. What did I miss? You missed the best podcast we have ever done. So and don't worry, it's a podcast, so you can listen to the show on Tuesday. Right then, maybe we go. Oh, yes, that's it then. Feedback has been achieved, which leads me on to the next bit I'm going to do, because it was forgotten last week, wasn't it, Kirby? Doctor Who news. What do you mean, oops?
The news.
The news.
Is that who1.co.uk?
No, it's the news.
Oh, it's not yet. Okay, sorry. I've been practicing.
I don't believe it. There was no
Said it yet, therefore it's not official.
I'm sorry. Sorry, we've got to wait for you. I'm just making sure. Sorry, Master.
I don't think anything's come out. What's the date on that piece? It says the 20th. Well, there's not been any blimmin' news after all that moaning and grumbling. It's exactly the same news we did 2 weeks ago. So we'll skip that. Never mind, eh? Which moves us on to the next bit of the show, which is
so there was
sponsors.
No point in... But wait.
What? Wait.
If we missed the news last week, isn't this new news?
No. It's the same. Would it be same news? The title of the headline is Frank Cox, 1940 to 2021, which we talked about the last time we did the news 2 episodes ago.
Yeah, so I mean, they have nothing in May. That one goes back to April.
Yeah, so nothing's happening. Although there's been a bit.
I have some Doctor Who news.
Oh God.
But don't you owe God me, sir? An audio story featuring Jean Barrowmont as Captain Jacques Harkness, his character from Doctor Who and spin-off Torchwood, has been pulled from release.
Yeah, why haven't they got that on DoctorWhoNews.net? Because that is Doctor Who news.
It follows allegations that in the past the actor repeatedly exposed himself.
It's a well-known fact. He doesn't deny it.
Yeah. He has previously apologised for his behaviour.
He doesn't have to apologise. Basically,
press. I'm still talking.
I'm just saying. Go on.
You get funny when people interrupt you. No one ever interrupts you, Adam.
Straight face, could you?
I think, oh, Kirby, you've started a trend. Adam's muted himself now. Drop. Torchwood Absent Friends was made by Big Finish, the company licensed by BBC to produce official Doctor Who and Torchwood audio plays. It was due to be released this month, which obviously is May, and this was only 2 days ago. So, in it, Captain Jack was due to be reunited with the Doctor, voiced by Big DT himself, DT10.
So they have recorded the story, so it may come out at some point.
Well, yeah. A Big Finish spokesman says, we have no plans to publish this this title at this time.
Yeah, so
earlier this week, a pre-recorded video featuring Mr. Barrowman was removed from a forthcoming Doctor Who immersive theatre show.
Mm. So it's absurd. John Barrowman has never made a secret of his what he does on set.
It wasn't a problem then, was
no.
it?
No. It's ridiculous.
Well, no. Well, this is the thing, though, isn't it? Hold on, we've got to do an equal argument, as much as I hate this sort of thing.
Yeah,
you know, he may have done it, and everyone may have laughed it off at the time, but now they're going, hold on a minute, people are now saying that's inappropriate. Mm. I was offended back then.
I know.
Well, and I hear that this whole report comes from Noel Clark, who himself is being, accused of sexual, inappropriateness sexual, and all that.
Yeah, yeah.
So he's just trying to throw the spotlight off of himself.
A little bit, yeah. But it's totally unfair against John Barrowman because he doesn't make a secret of his flamboyantness.
No.
And to be fair...
I've just got a quote here from John Barrowman.
Yes.
He said he apologised in 2008 for exposing his genitals during a live BBC Radio 1 broadcast. He said he was joining in the fun, it had gone too far. In a statement given to The Guardian, he said his high-spirited behaviour in Doctor Who was only ever intended as good humour to entertain colleagues on set and backstage. With the benefit of hindsight, I understand that I may have upset I may have been caused by my exuberant behaviour. I've apologised for this previously, he continued, since my apology... My understanding and behaviour have also changed. You know, when he gets lefty out.
No, now he just does it on video and puts it on Facebook.
Yeah. No, I'm sorry.
He only ever does the elephant.
It's unfair. John Barrowman is a lovely bloke. And
yeah, I agree.
It's really bad that they're doing this to him. He doesn't deserve it. He hasn't really hurt anybody. It's ridiculous.
But it's the culture of the world now, isn't it? Yeah. Did you see that story earlier in the week about a fella who... complained because he identifies as non-binary and on the train they said, good afternoon ladies, gentlemen, boys and girls, and he was like, well, they didn't include me, that's not inclusive. And there was a big thing in the press about it because you know, he was obviously making a fuss and he got so much abuse he has to close his Twitter.
Well, John Barrowman's had to close all his social media down, hasn't he?
Yeah, but that's probably a good thing for the moment, because you know, just disappear. A little hint for Prince William and Meghan Markle. Just disappear.
Yeah, that's really, really sad, though. So,
Master?
Yes?
If I can go back to the story we were just talking about, I just added a little bit of feedback because 10 days ago, we had a sequel.
We did?
Yes, on YouTube. The BBC posted a webcast of a... story set on the spaceship. It's the webcast is called Pompadour. It's a 2:39 story.
Okay. I'll have to have a look at that then.
And it's Madame Pompadour is wondering why she hasn't heard from the doctor and where everyone has gone from Versailles.
Oh.
So This was part of their Doctor Who lockdown stuff.
Yeah. Oh, good. I haven't seen that. Well, thanks for posting that, Kirby. I will say on the subject of John Barrowman that there was also talk about the stuff he's filmed for the new series of Doctor Who maybe possibly being axed. I hope not. But we'll see what happens with that one. Might be an even shorter series if they do stuff like that. But, yeah.
Maybe they'll just release one webisode. Like, you know, like, or maybe a little 5 minute, maybe the series of Doctor Who this year will be shown during Children in Need in November in that normal 2.5 minute slot. Yes, they get. Maybe, yes, that'll be the series.
Yeah. Right.
That's a season for the American listeners.
Whowon.co.uk.
Is it whowon.co.uk?
Have stuff coming soon on their
whowon.co.uk website.
Pre-order items. So the Fourth Doctor Dalek Universe, featuring Dalek. Tom Baker. First Doctor Adventures featuring David. What's his name again? David Bradley, who's going to Wales Comic Con, or he's supposed to be. If it happens, he's supposed to be at Wales Comic Con, and hopefully get the opportunity of meeting him. So fingers crossed there. Lease of Life is a Torchwood story featuring Bern Gorman. Is it Gorman? Yeah.
Yeah.
Bern Gorman, yeah, who's a Hollywood actor, but did appear in Torchwood. I just wonder if Mr. Barrowman's in that one. Are they going to just scrap everything he's done recently?
Saying the Hollywood actor in the way you said it there, saying it's kind of like, sounds to me in the same way that you say, I'm related to them. Yeah, as in everyone is.
I haven't discovered any relation yet, Ben, but I'll let you know if it happens.
Found anyone new yet? I'm really disappointed.
What, anyone new?
That you're related to?
No, the reason being, because my...
You're related to everybody.
Yes, probably. Yes. But as I said to you guys, yes, we might be related to everybody. It's the finding the link, finding how you're related is the interesting bit. It's a bit boring. So, yeah, I know I'm related to him. Yeah, he's my cousin. But it's knowing how that happened, where the starting point of that relationship is, what person started that sort of
that part of the tree. Are you related to by someone via Bradley the Goat Whisperer?
Probably, I don't know. But it's interesting when famous people turn up in your family research. Anyway, back to this. I was just...
Everybody.
Shut up. I'm just saying, when you're doing the research and the famous person does, it's interesting. When you actually see them, then you work out how that person's related to you. And maybe it may only be interesting to me, but I'm pretty sure there are thousands, nay, millions of people on ancestry.co.uk or ancestry.com, depending what part of the world you're in, that feel exactly the same way as me. I just wish that someone else in my family thought the place, apart from my mum. But there you go.
That also be ancestry.oz and Oz.
I don't think there's anybody in Australia interested in family history, because they all know they originated from a prison somewhere in Newcastle.
Yes.
got deported. Yeah, so...
Well, even Kylie Minogue.
Yes, even Kylie Minogue.
The Jason Donovan.
Yeah, well, that was an Irish prison.
Dennis.
Remember, eh? Stephen Dennis.
Craig McLaughlin. You're telling me they're all from a prison.
They're Irish prisons, Craig McLaughlin and the other one you said. Anyway, was that Who Won, wasn't I? Oh, yeah, so, yeah, Bern Gorman was...
Who Won that code at UK?
Not Harold Bishop.
Lone Centurion, which is a story about Rory the Centurion, Orton, I would presume, played by somebody I've met, funny enough, but not necessarily related to, and that is someone that Mary met as well, with the yellow bobble hat, which is Arthur Darvill. Ruby's Curse... Well, it's by Alex Kingston. She's written a book. The Third Doctor Adventures 7. Who voices the Third Doctor in that? I can't quite see on that. Somebody
Tim... Oh, golly, what's his last name?
That's a long name. Tim O'Golliomanas. Is that like a Russian name?
Must be Irish.
Tim Bill or Tim Tebow or something like that.
Oh, okay. And Doctor Who Magazine 564 is available right now if you wish to get it delivered to your door, whatever part of the world you're in. Whowon.co.uk. IWHeroes.co.uk. Now, I'm glad I can easily talk about my favourite shop, because we've recently spent an amount of money we perhaps shouldn't have done recently, because some new Umbrella Academy figures have become available. And Rob, who owns iwheroes.co.uk, every time I walk in the shop with Isabella, and I've now learned it's probably not a good idea to take her in there, he takes her over into the corner, shows her an Umbrella Academy bit of merchandise, and I'm forced to buy it, because it's nearly her birthday and we need stuff to give to her on her birthday. I might have to stop taking her in there. But so, some new figures have been purchased specifically for her. But so if you like the Umbrella Academy and you like the characters such as Klaus and who is the other one we got? Well, yeah, basically the cast. It's good anyway.
Sell her.
Pardon?
Well, if she's getting too expensive, just sell her.
She's trouble is, Ben, she's a really good girl, and I feel that.
In that case, you'll fetch a really good price.
What? Because she's a good girl. Well, yeah. You're saying that you don't. Good teenagers are very difficult to find. I think you're probably right.
No, yeah, but what I'm saying is, if you're moaning that Isabella's always expensive,
I wasn't moaning about Isabella. I was moaning about Rob actually exploiting her love for the Umbrella Academy to the cost of a certain amount of money that what I had to spend. But if you
sounded to me like you were moaning that Isabella cost you too much, and I'm just saying you could always, you know, put her on eBay.
But yes, if you like the Umbrella Academy, that's a good source. If you live in the Great Britain, you can get these items shipped to your home. And if you don't live in Great Britain, it's just fun to browse what products they have. Right, lavazi.co.uk has a page on their website dedicated to fan fiction. It's all incorporated in their blog page. So if you register for their newsletter and join their blog and stuff like that, you get to see lots and lots of Doctor Who related stuff. Like, for instance, there's a little post here that says the 8th Doctor Annual is on its way. And not only do they have a particular penchant with Doctor Who, they also sell some of the best cosplay items available on the internet, especially if you want to cosplay as the 4th Doctor, which a couple of people like to do from time to time. And I've just gone on their Doctor Who merchandise page. You can get the Doctor Who Collection Series Seasons 4 Blu-ray set. But Kirsty already has that one. Doctor Who Web of Fear Blu-ray, Kirsty. That's coming soon, by the way, 2021.
What's happened to 2021.
Kirstie? Where is Kirsty? She gone to sleep?
No.
Oh dear, we've done an Andy Nunny on her.
No, I'm right here.
Oh, you are there, sorry. I was just talking about the Blu-rays available at Lavazi.
Yes. Have you got the Web of Fear? From Lavazi, I'm in.
Have you got the Web of Fear one?
No.
Okay. Doctor Who, the Ice Warriors vinyl. That would be interesting to you, would it, Kirsty? Vinyls.
I only don't have a record player anymore.
Doctor Who, the Collection Season 12 Blu-ray set. Available on the 31st of May. So that's not far off, is it? And Doctor Who, the Collection Season 19 Blu-ray set, available from the same day. You can also
I've got some Doctor Who news that you've missed.
Hang on, I'll come back to that in a minute.
To me in a minute when you're done.
God. Doctor Who Series 8 Blu-ray Steelbook now available with the 12th Doctor with haircut. And Doctor Who Time Lord Victorious Echoes of Extinction vinyl and digital download from Big Finish available now. So you can click on all these links and buy all these products from our lovely friends, well, Melinda, at Lavazi. They really are upping their game a bit there. What?
I said yay. I like Lavazi.
Oh, I thought we might. Ben, you have some Doctor Who news for us.
Yeah, I've got two bits here, actually. Oh, yes. The first one is entitled All, that's in capital letters, All the Doctors Join the Immersive West End Show Time Fracture. Mm-hmm. So we haven't talked about this too much, is there? There's this interactive, immersive Doctor Who event
going
on.
What, the Time Lord Victorious thing?
Is it called that?
I can't remember.
It's called... All the Doctors will feature in one storyline for the first time ever, which is kind of why I think it shouldn't be skipped over, with pre-recorded cameos, voiceovers and secret encounters in the immersive adventure Doctor Who Time Fracture, which opens on the 26th of May. Ooh. Supporting a cast of 42 live actors across 17 different worlds from Doctor Who, the Doctors are joining Time Fracture. And then it's got a link where you can buy tickets. Immersive Everywhere, is that what you just said? No. Immersive Everywhere today announces more pre-recorded cameos, including Tom Baker, Peter Davison, Colin Baker, Sylvester McCoy, Joe Martin and current Doctor, some bloke called Jodie Whittaker. With voice actors taking on fan favourites, the 9th, 10th, 11th, 12th Doctor, as well as video and audio involvement from Gemma Redgrave and John Culshaw as the Brigadier. In a fitting tribute to his father, Michael Troughton provides the voice for Patrick Troughton, 2nd Doctor, and the 21st century voice of the Daleks and Cybermen is delivered by the brilliant Nicholas Briggs.
Indeed.
Additional voice talent provided by the team at Big Finish includes Jonathan Carley and Tim Treelaw, taking on more fan favourites from all eras of Doctor Who. Significantly, this will be the first time the fans can experience a multi-Doctor story in an immersive event. Doctor Who, the Time Fracture, puts fans at the heart of a story plunged into a journey across space and time featuring amazingly realistic worlds. Audiences will discover that time is to step up, be a hero, and to save the universe. Significantly, it's the first time the fans can experience a multi-Doctor story in an immersive event. So, yeah, there's one bit of news. That looks quite good. That opens, I don't know where that is, somewhere in London, I think.
Yeah.
But the other bit of news I saw, it just reminded me that after you just talked about all the audio stuff, there's a K9 audio annual that's being released on CD, which has got six different... I was waiting for that. yeah, that's coming out... it's not until November, but it's got seven stories, and they're all about K9, obviously. And they're being read by John Leeson, Bonnie Langford,
friend of the show,
Starkey. I thought you'd say that. Jeffrey Beebe. Is he a cousin?
Well, John Leeson.
Friend of the show.
Well, yeah. He's a sort of a friend of the show. He's a friend of the show by proxy because he spoke to you. The convention was an offshoot of the podcast anyway, so essentially he's a friend of the show by proxy. Right. We did share stage at different times, sort of.
You'll have to get ready for another name drop here then, all right?
Yeah.
The K9 portrait on the CD cover is by Alistair Pearson.
A friend of the show.
Thank you very much.
You interviewed on the stage.
Yeah. And it's available to order from lots of places. And I'm sure from all of our sponsors, I'm sure they'll have it in. Or if you go there, they'll be able to sort it out for you, I'm sure.
Yes.
Like whoone.co.uk and Lavazzi and the other one.
Yes. Brandon Moore, I detect a hint of sarcasm here, but I'm going to go with it anyway. Says, wait, is Adam related to someone? Someone who likes pizza? And then he said, the voice of the Third Doctor is it Tim, the world famous reporter? And then, I think I'll guess that reference. And Andy Nunny says, Brandon Moore, pardon? But that in a Birmingham accent. But I think it might relate. It'd be,
pardon.
I think John Pertwee did the voice of reporters over audio sometimes, a Doctor Who, didn't he, to use his incredibly diverse, trying not to sound like John Pertwee voices. There you go. Sorry, did you have anything else, Ben?
That's
good then.
I think that's all you've missed.
Did we do the news?
That you know, like you probably won't know, but people in England and the whole of the United Kingdom really will know that when we do news in this country, we have the national news and then the local news followed straight after. And what that was, Adam did the national news and I did the local.
Oh, geez.
So anyway, coming up next, it's the weather.
Well, yes, whether we carry on doing the show or not.
We're having weather.
Mm. I'll tell you what, it's been absolutely hammering down weekend.
I do find it's quite interesting doing that. I'm not going to bang on too much about it. There was a point many months ago that ended up being refuted that I may have been related to Abraham Lincoln. That still proves to be incorrect. However, I did watch a very interesting documentary in which there was a photograph of Abraham Lincoln after he died, basically, and apparently they were told they were not allowed to take any pictures of him when he was dead. So they were trying to prove whether this was or wasn't an actual photograph, because apparently there's a certain amount of pictures of Lincoln in existence, bearing in mind he lived between, well, photographs were available, and he lived around about the 1850s and 1860s. So they actually have all the pictures of him documented. And this, even though he was dead, would have been a new photograph of Lincoln. So they had this woman looking through the timeline and evidence to support or deny whether it would actually have been possible to take the picture of him on his deathbed, when the vice president and secretary of state said, no, nobody's allowed to take any pictures, blah, blah, blah. So, but she actually, I don't know if I should, it's a bit of a spoiler, because it's really worth watching, it was on Discovery Plus, was able to give an answer at the end of it, which was particularly interesting. That show is really, really good. So, yeah,
beep, you have been placed on hold. We will return to normal broadcasting shortly.
Just think it's worth watching. It's a really good, really interesting program. So I can't remember what it was called. Something to do with the Lincoln photograph. I think it was called something like that. But yes, of course, as I am related to George Washington, as I told Mary.
You're related to someone?
Third president of the United States, whoever that was. Can't remember his name. And somebody called Obama Barack.
That would probably be an Adams.
Oh, the third one, yeah, that's the one. It's sort of appropriate considering he's called Adams, eh? But yeah, I'm not really interested in connecting myself to American presidents. It just happens. Yeah. Right then, so.
You know that means that you're not the president.
I'm related to Tom Hanks.
We're related, a similar lineage. Through Albert the Deer Frightener, 15 generations ago.
Tom Hanks is very closely related to Abraham Lincoln, because the Hanks family is Abraham Lincoln's ancestors, and therefore he is related to Lincoln, but not. Hang on, he's related to Lincoln. That must be he's related to me, because I'm related to Tom Hanks. This is really interesting stuff, isn't it, everybody?
Hands up, who cares?
look at
none of those hands go up, Adam.
Next time we're going to be talking about a two-part story.
Yay.
Do you know, before we go, can I just say that I've been doing a bit of family research, and I've found out that my granddad is related to me.
Well done, Ben.
Yeah, thank you very much.
Well, I found out initially that my granddad wasn't related to anybody else in the family.
And then, actually, it went a bit further than that, because it turns out that my granddad's granddad, is also related to me.
Fantastic. Right, so...
And...
Yeah, God, finally,
I'll let you finish it off.
I can't remember what the story was we're doing next week. I know it's the one with the Cybermen, but I can't remember what it's called. Age of Steel or something like that, isn't it?
Yeah, I think it's Age of Steel. Or is it the Age of Steel?
Rise of Cybermen, Age of Steel.
So hopefully, Rise of Steel. We can be a little bit concise next week, because I don't want to be here for the whole of the evening dodging certain interruptions. But yeah, that's something to look forward to next week, is it not?
Yes,
it is.
Absolutely.
That can be an
extremely long podcast.
I've just said that hopefully we can be, or say we, I mean you, can be a bit concise next week, so we can't...
I was concise this week, and you were very good this week, Kirby. I didn't even mute myself.
Why would anyone want to be concise?
That sounds not well concise, as in to the point. Oh, God.
You know it's not going to happen, Adam. Don't build up something.
Well, it nearly did this week.
Here's a derailing point. If you haven't seen The Mitchells versus the Machines, watch it.
Oh, I saw it last night. I liked
it. Brilliant. It's just lovely.
Yes.
Did you watch Trainspotting?
No.
I must get around to watching that.
So disappointed.
I
meant to ask you that 2 weeks ago. Slipped my mind.
Right, I'm going to go and watch Murder on CCTV, and if I can get through the rest of the evening with my mind intact.
I got Trainspotting.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
You're not going to go back through the CCTV cameras outside your work, are you, Adam?
Could well be at this stage. Anyway, so until next time, thank you for listening, watching, taking part in the show. Please continue to provide us with feedback, especially audio, because it's an audio presentation. Goodbye!
Goodbye,
a horse just crashed through a mirror.
Sophia Miles.
But, God's sake, magic.
Whoa, it's magic.
You know.
Stop flapping your ears.
Never believe it's not so. It's magic. Scratch.
He's probably just woken up the whole house by doing that. Oh, now he's having a scratch. Stop it. Oh, hang on. That's Star. Star's trying to scratch her head, but she's got one of those cones of shame on, so she can't.
As riveting as this is, I think I might leave.
I want to talk more about who Adam's related to.
I can tell you I've got...
Anyway, okay. I gotta go. Thank you for showing up.
The fingers hovering over the big red button.
Well, now I know how to get rid of you lot.
Oh, yes, you do.
Excellent. I have a ploy. Goodbye.
Bye. See you next week, everybody. Ta-ta.
Goodbye.
The 20 Megabyte Doctor Who podcast is an APV Services production sponsored by whoone.co.uk, lavazi.co.uk, and iwheroes.co.uk. We are a proud member of the Doctor Who Podcast Alliance. Doctor Who is a trademark of the BBC. No copyright infringement intended.